So we do have a speaker tonight. I'm delighted to say they're going to share with us for 40 or 45 minutes our experience, friends, and hope journey to into and through Narcotics Anonymous. I'll let them tell you their story and hopefully let us know what their clean date is. But in the meantime, I'm going to hand you over to Michael, who's going to introduce them. So, Michael, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm a grateful addict in recovery. My name is Michael.
Hello, Michael.
A mobster.
Hello, LaQuisha, darling, and everyone else at the meeting. I am very honored to been asked to introduce this gentleman because I've had several conversations with him over the phone. I've never met him in person, but I met him at an online meeting I go to at 7 o'clock in the morning. And he's one of those people that I know works an amazing program, and he has a lot, and he cares a lot about Narcotics Anonymous. And also, he can really clap back very, very well as well. So I know that this, I know he, but he does it with a style, and he doesn't try to offend. But nevertheless, he is of true he's truly one of those people I really enjoy seeing at the meeting. Whenever I go to that meeting, I'm always happy to hear him. So with no further ado, I give you Bill M. from Seattle, Washington. Thank you. Take it away, Bill.
Thank you, Michael. Bill, just unmute yourself to share, my friend. There you go. Welcome.
All right. Hi, I'm Bill and I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hi.
Bill. Welcome.
Hello. I
Hello,
see I didn't know what to
Bill.
expect here.
Hello.
Oh, wow.
Hey,
Okay.
Bill. Good to see you.
Hey, Ian. Good to see you, brother. Okay. Michael, it's I was just starting to calm down and now I'm nervous again after that glowing intro. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's hard to take in all that. The glowing, it's just tough, right? What is that? That just triggers all my low self-esteem. I don't know if anybody can relate. So anyway, I'm Bill and I'm an addict. Okay, I'll just go ahead and launch. I'm one of these people that I'm very concerned about the 40 to 45 minutes. On one hand, it's like, really, fill all that time? On the other hand, knowing myself as I do, I might just be getting into third gear at 40 minutes and I will run out of time. So just give you a little warning there. I'm going to give a lot of warnings out, I think, because I'm a little bit nervous. My clean date, I'll start with that because I think that's a good point to start with, is the 28th of August, 1986. So how many of you were born after that anyway? So I always like to, if I don't know a whole room full of people, I'll lead off with how many were you born after that, right? And then I know who I'm talking to. But so yeah, covered wagons and all that, right? It's funny because I cleaned up in Seattle. I grew up in Seattle. I'm a homeboy. And I might let myself lapse into a little bit of local jargon here and there, just to kind of try to be myself if I can, but I'm not trying. But I haven't been in any English meetings for a while. I've been kind of taking a break from the one that I went to regularly, JFT. And so it was all of a sudden I was getting hit with the accents, so it was funny. I was a little bit rusty on fielding all the different accents, which I just love. So I love the atmosphere. I like your countries over here, your different cultures and stuff. So anyway, it's really nice to be here. And to be asked to share in this meeting. It's I just found out, I just went online, maybe a month ago or a couple weeks ago, just to kind of remind myself of, being able to go where, the website and everything. And then I noticed the audio only, and I thought, oh my God, that's kind of it. So I had to kind of wrap myself my mind around that. And what I learned from the pandemic was in running around the world is there was this sort of underground, well, not underground, but it was just a small movement of online NA before the pandemic. And there was a certain contingent of people apparently that really felt invaded by all this video online. Like they felt like that wasn't right. It was really hilarious. I mean, I spent, before the pandemic, I spent 34 years showing up to rooms and looking people in the face. So I didn't know what all the hubbub was about, but now, so it's kind of now after all the online experience we've all had, it's a whole different, it's just been a life, it was a lifesaver for me. I particularly found the meeting, the 7 a.m. meeting in UK JFT, and that became my home base during the pandemic. And I still try to stay in touch. I've been on a little break from that meeting, but it's just I go, but it's I've been going to regular meetings in this local Seattle area. I've been going to face-to-face meetings, and I'm doing steps with my sponsor. I didn't go anywhere. Trust me on that one. So, yeah, but I love that group, and I want to stay in touch online. I don't want to go away. But as we all know, there's the before the pandemic, during the pandemic, at right after the pandemic, and now the after pandemic. I call it the post pandemic. I think we're entering into the post pandemic. You run into people that are they started a live meeting. They go to live meetings. They got clean at live meetings, like we all did, but they didn't even know they had no idea about NA during the pandemic. It's so hilarious, It's like, wow, okay, that must be different. And so we're all kind of, us old timers are whining about the decimation of NA and the change and the oh, everything is different. And they look at us like, "Oh, you whiny old timers. When are you gonna face reality of today is December 7th, the 7th of December, 2024. Time to get up to speed." So I just turned 70, so you'll have to bear with me. I wander, and so yeah, with the clean time comes age. They didn't tell that wasn't really so stressed when I got here. Oh yeah. One day at a time, you can stay clean no matter what. And guess what? You're going to get old no matter what if you stay clean no matter what, unless you die. You know what I mean? So, and all kinds of other stuff that comes along with life on life's terms. Yeah. Life, one of the items of life on life's terms is death, and bad health and all the other stuff that comes with the life that comes and goes. So, it's a little bit disconcerting to finally reach a point where you're facing that, So I had a stroke a couple years ago, and I survived very nicely. I got really lucky, Got to the hospital on time. It was a kind of a brain bleed type of stroke. It was a bursting of a blood vessel, and it kind of built up and put pressure on my brain. But they did a procedure that was not so invasive. They decided they didn't have to open up my brain, which was nice, and they just went up through my arteries and did a little procedure. And then I just got lucky. I really got lucky. I recovered nicely in about 2 or 3 months. They gave me my driving privileges back. One of my favorite jokes was well, during that time was I would tell people at NA, oh, I heard, oh, I heard you, you had a major, I heard you had a stroke or whatever they'd say, and I go, yeah, there's only, I just got some bad news for people in NA. It didn't affect my speech center. They would laugh because it didn't. I had such a good time in the hospital, and it was due to NA. I was, and see, there you go, because I had already plugged into online NA. And here I am in the hospital bed for 15 days. I was in the hospital, and I was able to plug in, to online NA. And there were some local meetings I was plugging into, and I was plugging into JFT every, in UK. And so it was funny today. I went to the web. You guys will love it because I, one of my jokes was, as we, the World Services is working on this pamphlet. And I go, oh, really? Yeah. It's called time zone management, right? So today, sure enough, I'm on the website and I'm looking for, I'm plugging in, them for Higna. And that's why I go in and they say, well, what day? Saturday, what time? And I says, morning, afternoon, or evening. I says morning, because it's 10 o'clock in the morning here. And so that I'm good, and I couldn't find it. And I go, oh no, what happened? They pulled out of the website. What am I gonna do now? Da 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 da. And then it was like, oh, that's right. We're going to an evening meeting, aren't we here? So it's about 10 degrees Celsius here, 10 degrees centigrade right now in Seattle, pouring down rain, kind of darkish at 10 in the morning. So that's what we're dealing with here. It's kind of it's some bleak weather. And so I feel at home in Northern England, Scotland. I'd just be right at home, and that's where my predecessors come from. So no wonder they settled here. It's just perfectly bleak, and it's not below freezing. It's not too cold. It's just bleak. It's dark. My dog doesn't want to go anywhere near the weather. So what I wanted to do was, okay, so I'm babbling because I'm so nervous, and now I'm starting to calm down. So you'll have to bear with me. You guys will, So I don't know how many of you guys have faced this 40 to 45 minute Bearcat that your format is, but it's really not a usual thing. And in being clean for 38 years locally, it wasn't a usual thing. I mean, a main speaker at a convention might speak. There'd be speaker meetings that would come up. They would come and go because it's hard to get speakers every week over a long period of time. After a while, you run out of, then it starts to, and then people, and then it just folds. So we had a few here, but they just kind of faded. And so our normal format at a Seattle meeting is, would you chair the meeting? Oh, okay. And you show up and you say, hi, I'm Bill, I'm an addict. You maybe read some literature, which I'm going to do today. So just get, I'd like you guys to scramble around and pick up the Narcotics Anonymous step working guides, if you can. Step working guide. So if you can scramble around to get that, because I'm going to do a little bit of a deep dive into that book. So I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah. So anyway, would you chair the meeting? So you show up, and the chair of the meeting in Seattle, normally the parlance means you show up, you're the opener. You open with, hi, I'm Bill, I'm an addict. You read a few paragraphs out of a book or something, and you talk for about 6 minutes or 7 minutes at the most. That's it. That's what I grew up with. Would you chair the meeting? It's a 7 minute opener. It's not a 45 minute anything. And so we really, even though I've been clean a long time, I don't have, and then I've done workshops at conventions, and that's like a two or three people on a panel, and you speak for 20 minutes. And that was like, okay, that's a stretch. And I did the speaker meeting one time in Seattle when we had one. It was called Sit and Listen. And I had 5 years clean at the time. So what, 1991? And I was so excited. And I had really launched into deep dive into NA service and H&I. And I'll get into that in a minute. But I was so excited about this speaker meeting that I asked my parents to show up to it, my mom and dad to show up to the meeting, because there'd be like 100 people there. So it's okay, they'll get lost in the shuffle. Nobody will care. So they showed up, and lo and behold, I'm in the middle of my rap and I forget they're there. So I'm swearing, telling some colorful stories. And then I realized they were sitting there, and I went, holy shit, I'm in trouble. It was so hilarious. I was already like 37 years old, so it wasn't like, it wasn't the end of the world. And then they came out to coffee afterwards and met my sponsor and some of my good friends. There was a coffee shop a block away. It was summertime. My birthday's in August. So that was the first and last time my parents ever came to an NA meeting. They wanted no part of it after that. Okay, I'm glad you're in it, but it's like a little bit too many details for us. It was really hilarious. But I look back on that. Of course, I've lost my parents 10 and 11, 11 and what 2011 and 2012, and I miss them. Life on life's terms. So I'm the oldest of 8 siblings, and big Catholic family, and so that was my growing up. I have 18 nieces and nephews. you know, being the oldest of eight, I just aspired to never have children. Like, you know, no, that's too much responsibility. I thought that was the highest responsibility known to mankind, and I wasn't that responsible. So I tried to, I would, you know, and I'm, you know, I would, I think I would on purpose, accidentally on purpose, I would date women that were a little older than me, and they already had children, and they wanted no part in any more children. So I would just keep myself safe that way, right? So that was part of, I just like, you know, I don't know. There might have been a couple of abortions along the way, you know, but they would just kind of like tell me, and I don't know whether I believed them or not. So, you know, I don't, it just, you know, so they didn't get my permission, and I didn't really expect that I had a say in it anyway. It was their call ultimately anyway. They were being, you know, courteous. And I think, well, one of the two was weird, and the other one was, I don't even know if it was even true, but that's it. So I managed to get here without children, but I have a stepson. So I've been married for 15 years, and she was previously married to a man in the program who was very exalted, you know, he was very venerated around here. And at 20, at, you know, after 23 years of marriage, and he had just turned 25 years clean, he died of a heart attack, unfortunately. So, and so a couple of years later, we got together, and lo and behold, the rest is history. So 15 years later, but I've known her my whole recovery. She's just had 41 years clean, so she has more clean time than I do, and she reminds me of that regularly. I'm just kidding. But look, I always respected her program, and so that's a source of great strength for me. We, you know, it's funny. It's like I have a kind of a joke. Now I'm kind of not getting anywhere. I can see this. I'm rambling, but we have a kind of a favorite joke is that, well, I have a favorite job. I'm anyway. One of my jokes is that if I worked her program, I would commit suicide, and if she worked my program, she'd commit homicide. So anyway, you know, in other words, we work each other's, but we are different people. I'm extroverted. She's introverted. She just has a whole different way of approaching this program. And fortunately, we got together late. You know, I mean, we got together after, you know, I probably had, what was it, 23 years clean. She had 26 years clean. So we, you know, we were pretty settled in our ways on our programs, and we knew about each other's programs. We knew our approaches were different. And we would just go to meetings together, and we had, you know, we had different approaches. So we've managed to maintain that. We had a couple of arguments yesterday, talked through them, talked about a lot of stuff, and we, you know, we remained friends through the day. You know what I mean? And it's not all that easy, you know, sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, domestic bliss, you know. So yeah, during the pandemic, we spent a lot of time with each other, right? So, and you know, we've seen a lot of couples come and go, you know, and we managed to work it out. So I have great respect for her program. My program, on the other hand, well, I'm showing up for drill here. So anyway, what I wanted to do was, so I, you know, and I just to update you guys, I didn't really tell you much, like my using history, I guess. Okay. Real quick. So when I was 15, oh, I think this is a highlight. So here I am, big Catholic family. At the age of 15, I go on a trip with my uncle to Montana, and he was an absolute atheist, and he didn't grow up with my mom. He was her half brother. So anyway, out of respect, he didn't bring up religion around our household. He was respectful of my mom. She was his older half sister, so, because he didn't want to rock the boat too much. But at the age of 15, I went on a road trip with him, and he, you know, we ended up in a hotel room, and he got real with, you know, he had a friend that had a few, you know, for some beers in the hotel room. And I didn't drink. I still didn't drink. He wasn't trying to get me to drink. But we started having a discussion, and he started asking me questions about religion. And I always say that, you know, I left Seattle a Catholic, and I came back 5 days later an atheist, and I was absolute, totally rejected all religion at that point. And so that was my experience. It was like a conversion. It's kind of weird. It was like an atheistic conversion experience. And I hadn't picked up yet, so I couldn't blame it on that. I couldn't blame it on being high. I was just, but you know, it was just the way it was. I guess I was subject to revolution. Of course, that was the Vietnam War day, so I was already leaning that way anyway. But a year later, I was in a play, and we had a cast party at a house. Somebody had hosted a cast party after the play, and there were some beers there, and I decided I had been saying no for a few years, but I decided, but I had this, there was this girl I had a crush on, and she was a little bit, she was like a year older than me, and I was intimidated. I couldn't talk to her. And so I just, well, let me just see if that, see if a beer helps. I've been saying no for a few years, but you know, everybody else seems to be liking it. And so I had three, I had four beers, and my God, I could talk to the girl. I could talk to everybody in the house. I mean, I was just, you know, off and running. And so then I, the second time I used, well, since four beers did that, seven beers is going to be better. Yeah. So more was always the solution. And then from there, I was an instant addict because more was my immediate drug of choice. More. Doesn't matter what it was, it was going to be more. It was going to be, I'm going to keep going no matter what, and I ain't going to get shut down unless they shut me down. And as soon, and when I wake up the next day and the wheels have all fallen off, the obvious solution is to go get all fucked up. So I'm going to do it again and again and again. And does that sound familiar? So that's, do I qualify for NA? I think so. So I'm lucky. I'm a lucky addict because I don't look at using as, oh, maybe I'll have one, because I know that's, I never had any interest in one in my whole life, my whole using history. One never had, one or two had no, the only purpose of one or two is to get to number 20. It's the only purpose. So why? So that helps me to stay clean, because I know if I pick up it, I'm off and running, and that's just the way I roll. And I've proved that to myself. So I ended up kind of surfacing in 1978 at the age of 23 that I better be clean. And I decided to be all together clean, you know. And I don't know why. Complete abstinence from all drugs is what I decided on. And I didn't have any exposure to any 12-step program at that point. It was January 1978. But 3 months later, I got court ordered to meetings in the AA meetings. And I pleaded alcoholism, which I was, it wasn't, I am an alcoholic. So I qualified for that program. So that was my first exposure. And I went there for about a year and a half. And I, it's funny, I relapsed for a couple of months. And then I decided, you know what, that doesn't work for me. I'm gonna stay clean on the spiritual path. And I did for about 5.5 years. And in 1985, I was in university. I was doing well, but I was isolated. And I relapsed. I picked up again. I thought I'd be clean forever. And as soon as I picked up, it was the same old bullshit. I couldn't stop. Once I got started, there was no stopping. And I almost blew up my university thing. I managed to somehow not completely blow that up. I think because I had a lot of momentum of excellence for years. It's amazing how well you can do in school when you're clean. It was like, wow, this is quite a, you know, I picked up at the age of 16. Did a lot of school, did a lot of using during school. Didn't do that well when I was using. Did well before. And when I was clean, I did well. And when I was using, I was immediately in trouble. And I'm lucky I managed to salvage that operation. You know, anyway, I got to treatment on August 28th, 1986, walked up those stairs, and they said, you better, when you get out of here after 28 days, you better go to those meetings. And I went, oh shit, I've been to those meetings. I know what they talk about. I don't want any part of it. I'm still a raving agnostic who had flown through Eastern mysticism. So I had a little bit of a different bent. I wasn't totally, you know, total, you know, I don't know. It was Eastern mysticism, I guess. Yeah, Eastern metaphysics would be the closest way to describe my bent at that point. But it wasn't, you know, or nor orthodox, you know, it wasn't any Western religious, bent at all. You know, it was more the universe and stuff like that. So I went, oh, I'm gonna have to listen to all this mumbo jumbo. And so but I needed the community. And this is really what ties me to staying involved in NA. And you know, now NA, when I first went to NA in 1978, 79 in Seattle, it was just come to find out historically, you know, in tapping into the history around here, that the first NA meetings were just getting started in Seattle in 78, 79. So it was just a, it was a fledgling thing. And you know, and then of course back then they didn't have a book. It wasn't really, you know, it wasn't what we know today. So, but I wasn't really even looking for it either. But this one AA hall I went to, they had these they had this these discussion meetings down the hall. And that's where one of the first NA meetings popped up in. So I'd go to the, I love those discussion meetings anyway. I might have gone to an NA, but I don't think I did. I think I missed that one. But anyway, in 1986, I went to my first NA meeting and I was so disappointed. I was going there hoping I'd hear all these war stories of these super hardcore drug addicts, which I never used a needle, so I wasn't an addict, right? So I went to the NA and I was so disappointed. They all they talked about was being clean, recovery, life on life's terms. It was so boring. There were no war stories. I was so bored. I was so disappointed. But what came through that was, oh, but you know, the way they talk about addict is different than anything I've ever heard. The way that NA talks about addiction completely 100% applies to me. Oh my God, I qualify for Narcotics Anonymous. Who knew? And so then I was kind of doing both for a while, but then I got involved in NA service, and then about 2 years up, coming up to 2 years clean, I got involved in H&I, the service structure. I, you know, I changed sponsors, and this guy was on the World Committee for H&I. They were formulating the H&I handbook, so this was 1988, and I did a deep dive into service. You know, regional H&I, regional chair, area treasurer, all that kind of crap. All through the 90s, I did, you know, 10 different area positions, and I, you know, an H&I did, you know, I've probably done 500 H&I panels, you know, something like that. I've tried to, you know, just, I did so many. I mean, I was coordinator of meetings going into the King County Jail for 15 years. And so, you know, it was funny because the first time I ever went to the King County Jail meeting, I was so scared, I was scared out of my mind. I did a total of one day in jail before I got to NA. And it was for like hours. I was hours and got bailed out. I mean, like that was it. I had no experience. I was so afraid. And I went from being that afraid at my first one at the jail to doing a regular meeting at the prison, at the long-term prison, twice a month. And when I would walk in there, I would feel like it was my second home group. So I went from frightened out of my mind to feeling so at home in a goddamn long-term prison, where one of the guys that was a regular at the meeting was in there for life for murder and shit like that. So it was just like, oh my God. And I felt so comfortable there. What happened to me? What, I look in the mirror. What, are you for real? What's going on? So it was quite oh God, it's an amazing program, isn't it? I mean, who else does that stuff, right? Who else in normal society would ever have that experience? I would have never had that, right? And yet we all have our own story. That's what I found out about all that. You know, each one of us has our own story. So I don't I don't prejudge. Like here we have what, whatever, I can't count, but it's like 22 people, 21 people other than me. And so, you know, and so I don't know. I don't, there's 21 different stories in here. I have no idea where you guys come from. I'm not, I, hey, take what you can use and leave the rest. If you've got nothing out of what I had to say so far today, hey, I don't, you know, I don't, I won't say it. I won't say call your sponsor. I would never say something like that. So anyway, what I wanted to do is do a little bit of a deep dive book study because that gets me focused because I can just ramble and nobody gets anything out of it. And I need to, I need the literature. So I was going to propose, I was going to start diving into the step working guides. I gave you a kind of a little warning here. And I would suggest maybe even, you know, a pen and paper and be ready for some notes maybe or something because it's kind of turning into a little bit of a class. And I'll start reading a little bit. So on page 101, page 101, step 10 is what I was going to do. To step 10, 101 spiritual principles. I can always use some of that. So in the 10th step, we will focus on self-discipline, honesty, and integrity. Self-discipline is essential to our recovery. When it sounds like a lecture. Okay, so when we were using, we were self-seeking and self-absorbed. We always took the easy way out, giving in to our impulses, ignoring any opportunity for personal growth. If there was anything in our lives that required a regular commitment, chances are that we only followed through if it wasn't too hard. if it didn't get in the way of our self-indulgence or we happen to feel like it. The self-discipline of recovery calls on us to do certain things regardless of how we feel. We need to go to meetings regularly, even if we're tired, busy at work, having fun, or filled with despair. We need to go regularly, even when, especially when, we're feeling hostile toward the demands that recovery makes on us. We go to meetings, call our sponsor, and work with others because we have decided we want recovery in NA, and those things are the actions that will help assure our continued recovery. Sometimes we're enthusiastic about these activities. Sometimes it takes every bit of willingness we possess to continue with them. Sometimes they become so woven in our daily existence, we're hardly aware that we're doing them. And I'll just keep reading because I won't do the questions, but there's some great questions. They ask a lot of personal questions in this book. You know what I mean? The principle of honesty originates in step one and is brought to fruition in step 10. We are usually nothing less than amazed at the range and depth of our honesty by this point in our recovery, where before we may have had honest hindsight, able to see our true motives long after a situation was over. We are now able to be honest with ourselves about ourselves while the situation is still occurring. I'll just stop there because I wanted to cover the steps and the traditions, if I could, in this little rant here. And that's kind of ambitious since I told myself I was going to stopwatch myself, and then I forgot to do that. So I'll set it now. So I have no idea. I probably already talked 20 minutes. I've probably blown a bunch of time up. But anyway, step one. So what I've been looking at in step 10 is I kind of used to say, you know, step 10 is a mini 4 through 9. You know, it's take an inventory for, you know, and admit, you know, that I was wrong, which is the way, the beginning of me letting go of my defects, and promptly admit I'm wrong, which is sort of an amends process. So it's like, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But now I revise this and just, you know, leading up to this meeting that, so I'm now thinking step 10 is a mini 1 through 9. Okay. So it's you, cause you don't start with 4 without 1, 2, 3. Your 1, 2, 3 is the foundation for the, to set us up for the 4 through 9, the deep dive work. Right. So one, so we always take that for granted. Right. But the thing of it is that, you know, getting on. So go back to step one. You know, I admit I'm admitting that I'm powerless over my addiction. Now, see, I still have to do that. Like, I got this thing handled. I know it's incurable, but I'm cured. You know, and it's like, no, you're not cured. I'm not cured. I'm one hit away from destruction. I have to keep that up front. I have a healthy respect for chemicals, for substances, and that I have to maintain space, you know, so that I don't just, you know, get complacent and hang out wherever I hang out, wherever I want to, with whoever I want to, regardless of what their attitude is about chemicals. No, I don't get to do that because, you know what? I don't get to just be complacent. I have to be on high alert. It doesn't matter if I look that way. I don't have to be overreactive, but I have to be vigilant. And I love that word, vigilance, because I am vigilant. See, in case it escaped your notice by now, I am passionate about recovery. I'm not just kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm sailing through. No, I ain't sailing through. I'm passionate. If somebody really, well, this doesn't really happen to me, but if somebody even comes close to really thinking about offering anything to me, it doesn't really happen, but I've got to be in hypothetical because for some reason I give off vibes that I ain't interested. But if I even get a vibe about that or somebody thinks it might be a good idea, I look at it like they're threatening my life. I've had discussions over the years. I was working with some guy. He kept offering me to I remember this. I had the 3 strikes and you're out rule, which is a baseball reference. But the first time you offer me, you know, he was just, hey, can we smoke a joint after work? Okay. The first time it was kind of like, no, I don't do that. Then he did it again. Hey, do you want to smoke a joint? No, I don't do that. I'm in recovery. Okay. Then the third time he did it, I went, hey, dude, this is the deal. this is the here, and this is when I formulated the three strikes and you're out rule. I says, here's the deal, dude. You just threatened my life. You cannot do that. Do not ever offer me anything ever again as long as we live. I'm serious as cancer about this. To me, it's like pointing a gun at my face. Do not ever do that ever again. He looked at me like with total alarm. He obviously didn't get it the first couple times. He sure got it after that. He never offered me shit from then on. He looked at me with, ooh, I better don't mess around. Don't mess around with Bill. But that just happened spontaneously. And what I realized was, and that was, you know, I probably had 5 years clean. You know, that was the, that was what came out was the total passion of commitment to being clean one day at a time, no matter what, no excuses, no nothing. And I look at it as a life threatening proposition at this point. Jails, institutions, and death. I take it. So, okay, I'll get off my pulpit there for a minute. But that I just wanted to go ahead and dig into the passion because it's serious. Because I believe, I personally believe, if you want to know, okay, we'll get to that. We'll get back to the steps and we'll get to belief because we just got to the first part of so. And then my life had become unmanageable. So that's obvious. You guys know me well enough already to know that, oh my God, I can only imagine how unmanageable that fuck got when he was using, because it's bad enough when I'm clean. So I had no problem. You know, it's like step one, the day I walked up in the stairs to that treatment center, my clean date, I stopped using drugs. I lost the desire to use because I was done, and I started finding a new way to live. And that's why I could never figure out, when did I lose the desire to use? And I recently kind of revisited that point, and I went, I was done the day, my clean date, I was done. You know, I mean, because of my previous experience. Don't get that wrong. I wasn't done previously. That's why I picked back up. So I was done. And I, and so that sort of claim that was made, that primary purpose statement of our tradition five, the basic text, an addict, any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And I did all that on my, I was doing all that on the walking up those steps. I'll never forget my alcoholic uncle dropped me off. He was so grateful that he could drop me off for some help because he never quite got the help that he needed. And step two. So, you know, I obviously for my story, you know, I have an aversion to religious like propaganda, let's put it that way. And, you know, I came up in a major religion. So, you know, there's religious propaganda, but that doesn't mean that it's all bad. It's now I've been healed through the process to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. This gave me a healing experience of not being so negative and then realizing that everybody has their own trip. And that I respect other people's trip all the way to the point where I actually am, you know, I'm, if people are involved in the Catholic Church, I'm happy because that's their trip. And it took a lot of step work to get there, I'll tell you. But that's where I feel today. So that's a cool place to be. And it's not that I want to be part of it again or anything like that. I have my own deal. So in step two, I think what I was kind of like getting ready for this talk, and I was going, when did step two start to take root? And I think what it really took root was that I gave a reference to the service structure, to getting involved in H&I, to getting a sponsor that was deep into the service structure. And he mentored me on all things service structure, and he was involved in World Services. So he just really knew the structure and how it all fit together. And several of us just were mentored by him. I have a friend that died that even had a little more clean time than him, but he looked at him as a mentor because he was so, he had really studied how it all fit together. And so that I got lucky that I got that guy. He's no longer with us. He passed away. He was clean, died clean, but he was a great guy. Anyway, he gave me a lot. Well, I was going to give you guys a warning. I am emotional and I will cry, and I don't know when it'll happen. So I just started to kind of get there. I started to get a little emotional there talking about my former sponsor that passed away. That he was a great guy. So anyway, step two started to take root with the service structure. So that's where, you know, that was my approach. I couldn't just sit down and do a deep dive in the steps on day one with a sponsor that I trusted. That was never going to happen. But somehow or another, obliquely, I got involved in service and started going talking to guys in the jail and stuff like that. And, you know, that 12-step works started to kind of like, wow, it started to cement, it started to help create a belief, a faith in this process. Now I'm going to, I'm really, it's an emotional book. It's really, you know, just, you never know what's going to happen when you say, yeah, I'll come and speak. You don't know what you're going to get into, but you know, just trying to review what I'm going to talk about through the step work. It's like, fuck, man. You keep getting a new insight into what these steps mean. That's what's so amazing. Like they're just, it's just a template. It's not the one way and the only way. You know, let's get off the pulpit on that. This is the only way. I hate that. We don't, that's arrogant. I don't know if this, it's not the only way to anything. I don't know anything about all the other ways. I'm not going to try the other 15 million ways to prove that this is the only way. That's stupid. This is just my tribe. You guys are my tribe. You're stuck with me. God, you know, but that's just the way it went. You know, I landed here. Who cares? You know, try to budge me off this rock. I got people that do that. They decide to leave NA. I'm quitting NA. And then they have to adjudicate with me. I wonder why, right? So, you know, and I just say that's part of my 12 step work is to talk to people like that, that they want to quit NA because they just want to do other things. They don't want to get loaded. They criticize NA. It's not the right way. And then they have to run it by me for hours on end. You know, they have to try to convince me that they're doing the right thing. And it's like, they can only go so far because my faith is too deep. See, so I just go, okay, whatever. Good luck. You know, I'm still here. Oh, you're calling again? You know, 5 months later. Oh, here we go again. You know, apparently NA sucks, but who you calling, the old fucking NA to justify you not being involved in NA or something? It's weird. So it's the latest test for me. So step two, but you know, I could see in, you know, in going through this with you guys is that step two is deeply rooted. So that's why I wonder why, God, I am really, really hard to budge when it comes to is somebody getting too deep into criticizing NA, I get hard to budge at some point. Don't fuck with my tribe. Okay. Now I warned you guys, I might get into some lingo. So, oh yeah, no swearing. I try not to swear. I never know what the policy is, but so step three. So then, you know, now step three, we're going to finally mention God, you know? Oh yeah. You can have, you know, I love this thing that they would tell us you know, in rooms, you know, hey, you have a right to step two does not refer to God. It refers to a power greater than myself. And, you know, to me, you know, the simplest solution to step two for that is the universe is more powerful than me. That's good enough. So I came to believe that the universe could provide me with, you know, that has infinite possibilities for restoration to sanity. That's good enough for a start. But then, it was double talk because they talked about step two, you have a right to your own concept. And step three, they couldn't wait to hit you with the God word. They also made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of a power greater than myself that I've come to, I'm come to a concept that I've created with my sponsor. They don't say that, do they? They just use the God word. So I was hit with the God word and I knew that already, but I needed you guys. So I went, I'm going to have to swallow this. So for many, many years, I just swallowed it. You know, I just swallowed it. I just went, it's just the medicine I'm going to have to take. It says, I hate this medicine, but I'm just going to let it go in one ear and out the other. Well, lo and behold, that was the beginning of my healing experience with letting go of my roots of being so hard on my parents and these religious people, because that's all they knew and that's what they believed. What are they going to do? Tell me something they don't believe, or tell me, well, you should explore all kinds of things that we don't believe in, even though we believe in this. You know, I mean, that's just not what people do. So I started to see, So that started to the healing process. I didn't know it at the time. I was just going, I just need you guys. I need the tribe. I need the community. I need to not be isolated. Right? So, you know, and then, you know, God, whatever. And then, you know, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Okay, God equals the universe for the sake of, if I have to actually commit to a concept, I'll just say God equals the universe just to get out of the dilemma, right? So, okay, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of the universe. Oh, okay, what's the first sign that I'm making that commitment? Oh, step four. Oh, and that. I don't get to use the excuse about the God word in step four. There's no mention of God in step four, is there? We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now you're ready to look in the mirror, they've decided. Holy shit. Okay, I've made enough excuses. I've procrastinated. I've avoided. And now it's time to get a pencil and paper and answer these. Well, now with the step working, we didn't have a step working guides back then, but step working guides, they ask a lot of very, I had a sponsor that asked a lot of personal questions. So I got busy and boom, you know, and then and took an inventory of the of what's on the shelves there. And that's all it is. You know, that's what it turns out to be. Because what's so stupid is that we don't see the pattern of our own behavior. And this is a brilliant way to do it. It's like you just write down what you did, what you thought, who you're pissed at, just write it all down. And the patterns will just jump off the page. And they jump off, they start to jump, you know, as we get deeper into the step work, the patterns, they jump off the page about mid-sentence of the first sentence I write on some of this shit, right? What's the common denominator of all my resentments? Fuck, my attitudes that I bring into the situations, right? So, okay, so the patterns emerge, and then guess what? I get to spit that out in step five to my sponsor and to the God that I don't believe in, which is, okay, who cares? Let's call it the universe. So I'm admitting to the universe, to my sponsor, and to myself, the exact nature of my wrongs, that's the patterns. That's the patterns that I've etched in my patterns, of my behavior. I'm admitting to that. I'm not admitting to some happenstance. Oh, I happen to run into this situation and the guy pissed me off. Oh, no, no, no. I'm admitting to what I bring to the table before we ever got into the fight. Now, this is present day activity here, in case it escaped your notice. I don't have to go back deep into the recesses of my memory to find a place where I had a conflict with somebody. We just, you know, come on. I just have to go back, well, to yesterday. I mean, it's early today, you know. I mean, my wife and I got into two different skirmishes yesterday. So conflict is just like my middle name. So step six. Okay, now you take all these patterns, take character defects, and you write them down. And you write down kind of some general patterns, you know. And they're just like, So anyway, I'll jump ahead a little bit. When I did a deep dive in step 10, I ended up putting together a list of character defects that were kind of my go-tos. And so when I do a step 10 these days, I just run through the list. There's now 30. I added one yesterday, but there's a list of 30 of them. And I just run through them to see, and I just pick out which ones are operating today, you know, guilt, shame, remorse, self-pity, resentment, anger, fear, depression, frustration, confusion, loneliness, anxiety, betrayal, hopelessness, failure, denial, impatience. Now I'll get into the more specifics for me. Impatience, procrastination, laziness, intellectually lazy, like IL, my arguments are weak. Impulsive reactivity, or IR, that's just boom. I mean, that's huge for me. I just get triggered. Adversarial, combative, argumentative. I mean, it's a fucking lifelong pattern, you know. I need to be heard. I'm just crying for attention. There were too many kids in the house. I gotta be heard. I'm the oldest. Come on. I was heard from day one. I gotta continue to be heard. A lack of discernment is one of my favorite ones, because it's like bad judgment, right? Judgmental, interruptive. You can see that. You know? I just don't, impulsive reactivity coupled with the interruptiveness and being interruptive. And I just added this one yesterday. I guess it's 27. Meddling douchebag. I read this article in a local publication that he was talking about. Some guy that wanted to get involved in somebody else's, wanted to get involved in somebody else's business because they felt like it was justified. And the guy says, the columnist says, I understand your desire to want to be helpful, But sometimes we're just a meddling douchebag. And I just went, oh, I fucking grabbed that and ran with it, man. I love that. It's like, I can relate, which is codependence, I suppose. But it's like, I can be such a meddling douchebag, which is control issues, right? And so I added that yesterday because I don't know why I didn't have that before. So anyway, so step six is like deep dive into, looking at these patterns, So during the pandemic, I did a really deep dive into step six. And then when I got to steps, and then when I got to the end, and I looked at it, I went, we're entirely ready. Oh, I've never been more ready. I'm sick of looking at this shit. I've written 150 pages on this shit. I'm so sick of it. And I looked at step seven and I went, oh, humbly ask God. Here we go with God again. But by then I'm getting some healing because it's his higher power. I'm humbly asking a power greater than myself to remove these shortcomings. And so then I went, oh, I just have to be ready. God's going to do the heavy lifting. For a minute there, I typical addict response, I don't have to do anything. God will do it all. God, I remember this expression, God don't slip no cheeseburgers underneath my door. You know what I mean? Well, I'm not going to get out of work. But for a moment there, I thought God's going to do all the heavy lifting. And I didn't see it at first. So then made a list of all people, step eight. So now I'm in. Now here's another inventory. Made a list of all the people, all the fucking people, the institutions, people, places, and things that I had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all, kind of like step six and seven, all entirely ready. Have God remove all. It's all about all. They love that word all. In other words, completely willing, no matter what. And then step nine, did it. And in the process of exploring, now I'll get emotional because such a breakthrough, is that this concept of living amends, in order to do a living amends, let's say with my family, it's an ongoing process. In order to not reperpetrate, I'm going to have to change, which means that I have a responsibility to not act out on those same defects, which means that gets into mindfulness. I have a responsibility to catch myself before I act out. That's the living amends. So guess what? God isn't doing all the heavy lifting. I got to meet God halfway. God damn it. The living amends concept put me in a position where I realized I have to meet God halfway. I don't get out of this easy. I have to continue to be vigilant in my activity about not acting out. It was such a breakthrough. So then we get to step 10, and that's what I was doing today, the deep dive. So in the pandemic, I settled on, I got to the step 10, and I got into doing it regularly. I did about 250 of them. My sponsor would not listen to them all. It was just, there's too much. He drew the line there. I'm not going to listen to every single one of those. So, but I got to know this thing. And so, it's like the first five questions. So I'll go to page 100 here. I'll do a quick deep dive into that because that's what, step 10 is more amazing than I ever knew. So this first five questions, so on page 100, they have the, it start it's there's 36 questions, and this is their the version in this book is just one version, but they decided to put this in the book. But this is your daily inventory that they gave you an example of one you could do. And so the first five questions are about faith and God and higher power. So they start right out with you getting in touch with your higher power before you look at anything specific. Then question six, do I see any old patterns in my life today? Seven, have I been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Eight, have I set myself up for disappointment? Nine, have I been kind and loving toward all? In the 250 step 10s I did during that period, I think I answered yes to that maybe twice. I managed to actually look at a day and went, oh, I guess I managed to be kind and loving towards all today. I don't know how I pulled that one off, but most of the time that's a no. So I just turned a lot of these into yes and no. because it was sort of a ritual, you know. But then they get to, they end up getting, and this was question 18 was the big one. Which defects played a part in my life today? How? So you could go yes, no, and this and that, and again, be and have your standard answers. But at 18, and that's where I went to my list, what I went through with you guys. So I go through this list, and so I just write down, I just pick out the ones on the list that applied, that I knew probably applied. And then the B question, the B part of the question is how? How do the defects play a part in my life today? And that's when I would get into how those defects were involved in whatever crap I was involved in that day. And then, you know, and then we get yes and no question, you know, was there fear in my life today? You know, of course. What did I do today that I wish I hadn't done? What didn't I do today that I wish I had done? So this is kind of like, okay, let's revisit what you did in 18. Is there, you know, if you did anything on 18 about acting out on defects, then you're going to, go yes to, or then you're going to have something to, you know, quick answer on number 20. What did I do today? I wish I hadn't done. And then you're going to go, what didn't I do today that I wish I had done? And that's the list of assets. So I got a list of assets here. There's sort of the kind of the spiritual antidotes to the defects, you know, and then being clean, open-mindedness, God awareness or mindfulness, honesty with others, acceptance, positive action, sharing, willingness. I should say sharing and caring, courage, faith. Yeah, I have caring, gratitude, kindness, generosity. There's just a list of some quick spiritual principles that might, and I look at those and go, well, there's always going to be something a lot in that list that I wish I had done. I wish I had been kinder. I wish I had paused. You guys can already see, oh, I wish he would pause forever. You know what I mean? Am I willing to change? Question 21. And that's always that's just a fastball down the middle of the plate reference to baseball. Am I willing to change? That's the bottom line, right? Willingness, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. If I'm willing to change, I have a shot. If I'm not willing to change, I'm screwed. And then guess what? I'm just going to re-perpetrate. If I don't change, I'm going to keep acting out on these patterns that are lifelong that were probably created at a time that it made sense. When I was 3 years old, when I was 5 years old, when I was 7 years old, it made sense to create these defense mechanisms because I needed them at the time. I felt it was just an instinctual response to a dysfunctional environment, right? But then I carried them out and then I used and I froze the process of development and maturity. And then I washed up on the shores of NA and now I'm clean. And guess what? I'm stuck with all those. I'm stuck with that. I'm stuck with that same set of circumstances I was addressing when I first picked up. They didn't go any, they don't magically, these lifelong patterns don't magically disappear. I wish they did, but they don't. No, there's some mindfulness involved, right? That's the spiritual practice. So anyway, 26 is, do I owe any apologies or amends? And 27, I love that one. Where was I wrong? If I could do it over again, what would I do differently? How might I do better next time? That's a blueprint for change. That's what it is. But it's so easy. But yet it always seems like, didn't I already answer this? I went through all this earlier. Now you're just repeating the question. Yes, they do a lot of that in the step working guides in case it escaped your notice. They repeat. I always tell sponsees, hey, edit, cross out, add, do whatever you have to do. If you think you've already answered the question, then you have an answer for that question. Asked and answered. And I do that sometimes. Asked. And this one here is, they ask the same question in five different ways. Number 28 is an automatic yes. I don't even need to look at it. Did I stay clean today? It's a yes. It's a 28. Yes. 28, yes. For 38 years plus, it's 28 is yes. 29, was I good to myself today? Well, that's not an automatic yes, is it now? 30, what were the feelings I had today? You guys don't want to hear about it because I've already written half a couple pages on it earlier. And what did I do to be of service to others today? Okay, now we're getting into the solution. And the last five questions of this thing are solution. What did I do to be of service to others today? What have I done today about which I feel positive? What does it give me satisfaction today? What did I do today? I want to be sure I repeat. I guess there's six questions. Did I go to a meeting or talk to another recovering addict today? That's the bottom line. Was I totally isolated? Was I in bad company, which is an addict alone? And the final one, and I had my standards. What do I have to be grateful for today? I always lead off with V, my wife, Vandy. V, V, comma, N-A, comma, sponsor, comma, sponsees, comma, friends, comma, family, comma. Those are automatic. You know, just right off the top. I always have the automatics, and that keeps me grateful. And it was funny, this gratitude list thing that's real popular. That's what that is. Question number 36 is a gratitude list. So they end step 10 with a gratitude list. I think I've done enough with step 10. I'm going to go on because I don't want to go. There's some great stuff here. I guess I will do the moving on thing on page 102, because this is really incredible. One of the most wonderful things about the 10th step is the more we work it, the less we'll need the second half of it. In other words, we won't find ourselves in the wrong as often. When we come to recovery, most of us, I think I've gone over time, so I think I better wrap it up. It didn't matter how much we were hurting the other person. I jumped down to the bottom of the paragraph. It seemed easier than working through a problem, building a stronger relationship. The 10th step makes it possible for us to have long-term relationships. That is a really, when we need to have long-term relationships, especially in NA. After all, we depend on each other for our very lives. Many of us feel deeply connected to the people who came to NA when we did and have stayed around. We've done service work with one another, shared apartments with one another, married one another, and sometimes divorced one another. We've celebrated milestones in each other's lives, birth, graduations, buying homes, promotions, and recovery anniversary, life on life's terms. So, you know, who knew what was involved with step 10, which is step 10 is the opening for long-term relationships. And I'll end on opening paragraph of step 11, page 107. Step 11 says that we already have a conscious contact with the God of our understanding, and that the task before us now is to improve that contact. Who knew that step 11 implied that I already had a conscious contact? It just assumes if you've gotten to step 11, that's saying you could not have a conscious contact with a power greater than yourself if you've actually done the first 10 steps. That is quite a powerful claim. Now we get to develop my own personal spiritual practice in step 11. And so I am grateful, Narcotics Anonymous, that I've gotten this incredible healing from going through this process. It was tailor-made for my stupid ass, in case it escaped your notice. I am a tough nut to crack. I am stubborn, and I am just willful, and I got it all figured out. And these steps have opened the door for me to have a healing that I don't know if it would be possible any other way. I don't know that. I just know it happened. So bless you guys. I think I went over time. I lost track of time. Nobody interrupted me. So you guys are really graceful. Thank you so much for having me in here. I bless you. And I can't believe you guys, as many of you as are still here. Thank you very much.